I'm reading from Rita's Bible. It's been quite a delight to have this Bible in my house for the last 2 days. From the Messenger, starting with Ephesians 5, 1 and 2. Watch what God does, and then you do it, like children who learn proper behavior from their parents. Mostly what God does is love you. Keep company with him and learn a life of love. Observe how Christ loved us. His love was not cautious, but extravagant. He didn't love in order to get something from us, but to give everything of himself to us. Love like that. And then from 1 Peter chapter 4, 7 to 11. Everything in the world is about to be wrapped up, so take nothing for granted. Stay wide awake in prayer. Most of all, love each other as if your life depended on it. Love makes up for practically anything. Be quick to give a meal to the hungry, a bed to the homeless, cheerfully. Be generous with the different things God gave you, passing them around so all get in on it. If words, then let it be God's words. If help, let it be God's hearty help. That way, God's highest, brightest presence will be evident in everything through Jesus, and he'll get all the credit as the one mighty in everything. On course to the end of time. Oh, yes.
I'm going to pretend you're in my grade 5 class because I think they're less intimidating than you guys. I'm just kidding. Okay. So when Rita called to ask me to speak in church, she gave me two questions to reflect on. One, when have I received love or been the recipient of love in action? And two, what did that make me want to do? I said yes, because at first I thought, this is a fairly easy topic. I've had a supportive church, family, and friends. Of course, I've been the recipient of love in action. So talking for 8 to 10 minutes on this shouldn't be too hard. But then I started thinking harder, and suddenly it didn't seem so easy anymore. I guess I was looking for some big, powerful wow moment that I could share and talk about. But I couldn't come up with any, though I'm sure I have some. All I could think of was the ways I've been loved through small acts. Like when someone at UFW held the door open for me when I was still so far away I had to break out into a trot so they wouldn't have to wait for me for so long. Or when coworkers asked me how my weekend was, showing me they care about me beyond just work, or a prof letting her meeting with me turn from my paper to us just talking about other random real-life things. I didn't think those were exceptionally noteworthy or interesting to talk about, especially in church. But as I thought more and prayed more, I realized that these small acts of daily love and action are indeed noteworthy. What is love and action besides those small acts? And that these small acts are often the building blocks of bigger acts of love. Maybe I view simple things like door holding as love too easily, but for me, that's someone acknowledging that I exist and am worth giving up that small amount of time for, instead of them just barging through the halls on their own mission. These small moments of being loved mean the most to me. When I wander the halls of UFW stressed about papers and exams, not that that ever happens, someone giving me a bit of their time is just refreshing, and it reminds me to do the same. Recently, I was having a rough day and wanted some encouragement in prayer. When I got up to my room, I just checked my phone once more before heading off to bed, hoping that maybe God had sent some encouragement through someone's message. And sure enough, a dear friend from my summer job had texted me, asking me how I was doing and that she missed me. It probably took her less than 2 minutes to send that text, but to me, it meant so much that someone was thinking of me and valued me. I was loved and encouraged not only by her, but also I recognized God's love through me through her message, that he loved me enough to send someone to encourage me. These are ways I need to remember to love others, not through extravagant displays, volunteering in multiple organizations, or donating lots of money, but just small and quick acts, a quick, hey, how's it going message, a compliment, even a smile. They can go such a long way in someone's day. I know they go a long way in mine. Loving others isn't just saying that we love them, but that God loves them too. And loving more doesn't necessarily mean loving more extravagantly, but can look like loving through small, simple, daily acts of self-sacrifice that are often the hardest to do. I noticed as I thought about various random examples of when I received love that most of them involve some sort of time commitment to me on the other person's behalf. In a world where I, and I think others too, feel myself too often drawn into my own projects, goals, and plans, and when the days must be losing hours because a day is never long enough anymore, for someone to give someone else even just a minute of their day can be a selfless act of love. Kevin's sermon on Jesus feeding the 5,000, focusing on how Jesus said no to himself and his personal needs and wants, but yes to those around him, and to spend time with people as he did throughout his whole ministry, is such a powerful example of this daily, self-sacrificing love that meant the world to those he interacted with. This past month, I've spent my Fridays at Winkler Elementary School for my practicum. I've been placed with an amazing teacher, and I'd like now to reflect on how I see her putting love into action through one example. Each day, I see her take time to love her students. It's inspiring for me as an aspiring teacher, but also just generally in my day-to-day life. Each morning, she intentionally greets every student by name at the door, often asking about things she's learned that they were going to do the previous evening. And each afternoon, she says goodbye to each child too. I haven't been in enough classrooms to know if this is rare or not. I can't remember this happening when I was in school, and I haven't seen it to this extent in my other practicums. But she tells me that this is a way of beginning and ending on a good note, regardless of what happened during the day. To her, this routine is a way of connecting with each child, showing each child her love and care for them every day, so that every day they are reminded that, yes, there is someone in the big and often scary and lonely world of a grade fiver that knows them, cares for them, and loves them. When she could quickly be doing last-minute prep for her morning, she's instead giving her students her time. Even when she's maybe not feeling energetic, she puts on an energized smile, telling her class that she is so excited to see every one of them. And this isn't a mentality she's faking. I see genuine love for her students shining through her every day. I'm inspired by her, to say the least. And while I hope to take on the practice of greeting and sending off my students personally when I get my own classroom, I think this idea extends past that context. There's the idea of being lonely in a crowd, and this is the heartbreaking truth for too many. How many people have no one who really notices them and cares about them, or at the very least believes it to be true? I think taking the time to look at someone directly, call them by name, is a simple yet powerful example of love in action. When Jesus would perform miracles, he stopped and gave that person all his attention. As far as I know, he didn't perform mass healings of the whole crowd at once. He gave each person he healed his focus. I certainly don't feel loved when someone on Facebook has Merry Christmas everyone as their status, but if they actually message me, then yes. The daily acts of love I mentioned earlier, like holding the door open, saying good morning to coworkers, or helping someone pick up a mess, are all ways that we can intentionally choose to love a specific person, to show that person that we care about them, even if we hardly know them. We love them because God loves them, and they're worth our time to show them that love. If God loves the individual, then I want to too. I don't want to love the crowd as a crowd. I want to love the individuals who make up the crowd. To me, that would look like me daily asking God, which person can I bless today? Which person can I love today? Who needs to know that their Father loves them and knows their name? We're not always in positions when we can do the big acts of love like mission trips or donating large sums of money, but we're always in a place where we can say yes to that small daily act of love and action that we do for someone that can reveal or affirm a much greater love for that person.
Dance forever and a day. We'd live the life we choose. We'd fight and never lose. Those were the days. Oh yes, those were the days. Da 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 much, David. That was a beautiful introduction to what I want to say. Those Were the Days is strongly claimed by the Russian gypsies to be their song. And there's a dominant claim that it was created by an unnamed Russian peasant in the later 19th century. The song underwent many abridgings in the early 1900s when it was translated into Finnish, Spanish, French, Italian, German, and in the mid-1900s, English. In 1968, with its translation into English, it was dubbed Those Were the Days. Mary Hopkin, a 17-year-old Welsh artist, turned it into a hit that year, and it became an earworm for me. I first heard the song that year and the line, "Oh, my friend, we're older but no wiser, for in our hearts the dreams are still the same," has dogged me to this day. I often wondered why the dreams should remain the same and came to understand that the dream should always stay the same and undimmed. They're the mainstay of our lives. They hearken back to a simpler, more manageable time when the cares were different, less hectic, and less turbulent. When I remember the reality that I'm older, but really no wiser, I realize that I'm just more dependent on my Lord. My dreams can experience their own modifications as He would lead, and I can love the people I cross paths with better. This because my Lord helps me to better empathize with the monumental cares and concerns that are out there. Everything depends on the spin He puts on things. I work in the collegiate, and my work often leads me to encouraging students who would rather not be there. There's an old name for my position. I'm the dreaded truancy officer. Remembering the dreams with the spin my Lord would put on them makes the job quite manageable, quite pleasurable, actually. Being a friend to someone who would really rather not be there becomes easier when the Lord takes over and decides what really matters. He helps to make the job work. Dreams that lie just below the surface and pop into place precisely when He deems them appropriate are such a blessing. The old story of the fellow who went along the seashore throwing beached starfish that had been left by the receding tide back into the water comes to mind. When he was told that what he was doing was essentially useless and that his time could certainly be better spent, he responded, "What I'm doing makes a pretty big difference to this one," as he heaved another starfish back into the water. Case in point, I was sub-teaching in a classroom one overcast day when there was a frantic knock on the door and a student burst into the room. He was one of the Smoker's Corner regulars and, in my opinion, spent way too much of his days standing out on the edge of the schoolyard just behind that big elm tree. He said, "Mr. Bergen, your back windows are open and it's starting to rain. Your truck is locked, so I couldn't close them." I handed him my keys and said, "Can you help me?" He ran off on his important errand and returned the keys moments later, saying that the windows were all closed now and everything would be fine. This young man was taking the opportunity to apply the lesson in kindness he'd learned. Kindness for me? Yeah, partly. Kindness for others? Oh, yes, kindness. All around. Love does have a way of coming back around when one remembers the dreams of our younger and less turbulent days. This event had many tendrils attached to it. When the young man returned the keys and announced that all was now well, he was greeted with an entire classroom of students with appreciative smiles, and I'm sure he didn't totally understand why he had made the entire classroom a place where many new resolutions were being formed to make the world a kindlier place, a more helpful and loving place. I'm guessing he probably won't ever know what a blessing he was that day to a whole classroom of people. One more little story. And I love stories. I live for stories. We're an agriculture-based community. We grow an abundance of corn throughout the valley. Somewhere in the valley there lived a farmer who grew the most excellent corn. Every year he won all of the national awards for the best corn grown anywhere in the nation. His corn was nothing short of incredible. A news reporter interviewed him one day and discovered something unbelievable about his system of preparation. The news reporter discovered that in his planting preparation, the farmer went around to all of his neighbors to share his best seed corn with them. The newsman was incredulous. How can you afford to share your best seed corn with your neighbors who are entering corn in competition with yours? He asked. Why, my friend, the farmer responded, the wind picks up the pollen from the ripening corn and swirls it around from field to field. If my neighbors grow inferior corn, the cross-pollination will steadily degrade the quality of my corn. If I'm to grow good corn, I must help my neighbors grow good corn first. And so it is with us. Those who wish to live meaningfully must enrich the lives of those around them. They must remember the dreams, the things of the heart, for the value of a life is measured by how one loves, how one touches the lives of those around him. The real truth is that no one wins until everyone wins. One more story and I'll stop. The event happened in a huge city church. The university year had just begun, and a number of people were returning from the various holidays they'd been on. Church was coming to order, and the people were finding their seats. A young fellow came in and wandered slowly up the center aisle right to the front, where he plopped himself down on the floor right in front of the lectern. He was a hippie-ish-looking kind of fellow, with the ponytail and beard many of his peers at the university sported. One of the older gentlemen, very proper, and wearing the traditional three-piece wool suit he once saw a lot of in that congregation, watched him go right up to where he disappeared as he sat down. The elderly man began to walk up the aisle with a purposeful, measured stride, joints clicking as he walked, until he got to where the young man was sitting. People were gasping. A few held their breath. There was an audible groan. All were hoping there wouldn't be a scene. The older gentleman sat down with great effort, using the bench and his cane for support, snuggled in, using the front bench for a backrest, and when it seemed he had finally gotten himself comfortable, he nodded in welcome to the young man and settled in for a wonderful morning of worship. Church took on new meaning for that congregation that Sunday. Thanks so much.